हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Lesson 27. God consciousness or transcendental loving service of Godhead is never imposed artificially upon any living being, but it is inherent in him. It can be revived only by practice. Lesson 27. Okay, now we're on page 435. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, they are mine. The result of receiving knowledge from a self-realized soul, or one who knows things as they are, is learning that all living beings are part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, Lord Sri Krishna. The sense of an existence separate from Krishna is called Maya. Maya, not Ya, this. Some think that we have nothing to do with Krishna, that Krishna is only a great historical personality, and that the Absolute is the impersonal Brahman. Factually, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, this impersonal Brahman is the personal effulgence of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the cause of everything. So all the living entities are connected to the Lord. The Brahman is his personal effulgence. Then we understand that everything will be connected. Okay. So this element of being connected then becomes very important, because whatever is there is Krishna. It's an illusion to think it's not Krishna. So we're used to being in an environment where we don't see it connected to Krishna. So we've gotten used to that and think that's standard. Now we're having to learn this new vision, though it is actually just a standard vision. Spiritual world, that's how everybody sees, is everything's connected to Krishna. So that means that all situations that they're in, then they're always aware of Krishna, right? And it's inspired by the environment. So that in rasa is called the vibhava, right? Vibhava means that which inspires you in you know, the rasa, what makes reminds you of Krishna. Right? So that means everything around. So anything, it says anything connected to Krishna. But for devotees, everything's connected to Krishna. So there's that which is directly, personally connected to Krishna. And there's there's everything that you can use to please Krishna. Does that make sense? Right? And so the idea, everything is for Krishna. So here we learn, okay, Krishna's God. He's the greatest. He owns everything. So then we're going to think, okay, this belongs to God. Right? So that's the first step. What's the second step?
Should be used for God,
right? So that's the whole point, is that if it belongs to God, it's to be used for God. Okay? So now the resident spiritual world, then they don't have to worry necessarily about it belongs to God. That's already been accepted. So when they see something, it's just how to engage it in Krishna's service. Right? So whatever situation you're in, it's how can this situation be connected to Krishna? How can it be used for Krishna? Does that make sense? So all it is we're going through the step. You know, I'm not the body, so that means the field here is not mine, right? Because how are we perceiving this? Right? We're perceiving all this that since the field is the body, right? We'll say, no, there's me, and then there's the field. No. The field, you're perceiving it only because of your body, because you can only perceive the field through the senses. And you're going to interpret that field according to your own desire. Right? It's not going to be something else. And that's going to be what's good for your body. Does that make sense? That's the whole idea. It always comes back to the body. So the whole field is the body. So we say we're not the body, that means we aren't anything here. Right? So if we're not it, so we're not the controller and enjoyer, it's not ours, because if I'm the controller and mine, it's, you know, it belongs to me, then whose is it? Who is the controller and enjoyer? Right? And then that's God. So then if it's, and so, because I think I'm the controller and enjoyer, and it's mine, therefore it's for me. But if I'm not the controller and enjoyer, and God is, so then that means whatever's there in that field is for the service of the Lord. You understand? So this is this process we're going through. Right? So that's why they said there's a difference between the upaya bhakti and the phala bhakti. Right? The phala bhakti means you've gotten the results. You're on the platform of prema. Therefore, the steps that you go through in upaya bhakti to get to the point that it's to be used for Krishna, you don't have to go through. You don't have to think, oh, I'm not this body, I'm not the mind, you know, don't be attached. You know, it all belongs to Krishna. Krishna's the controller and enjoyer. So therefore I should engage everything in his service. Right? And then, okay, so what can I do? Does that make sense? And we'll look according to our values and what that part of the field will pick up on. And then that part of the field will engage in Krishna's service. Right? Spiritual world, then they're going to look at, it's automatically for Krishna. They only want to please Krishna. So naturally, according to their nature, they'll look at the field and what their nature means, what way they'll serve Krishna. Here in the material world, nature means how you're going to serve yourself. Yeah. Right? It's your own pleasure that we have the specific nature we have today. But in the spiritual world, the nature is how they want to please Krishna. Yes.
When you're in like vijnanam, are you still actually acting on your own behalf?
Vijnanam means you're on the Brahman platform. Mm. So then technically you see everything in connection with Brahman. So it's not so much, but there's still the element, you know, of working with your own conditioning. Mm. But it's not a matter of that is the motive behind. The motive behind is this being spiritually situated. Mm. Does that make sense? That endeavor for liberation. Does that make sense?
Yeah. But it's But it's, yeah, still from my point of view.
Yes.
Because of the condition.
Yeah, I mean, you can be working on it that, you know, the point is for Vaishnavas, you're trying to switch it. Mm. Mm-hmm. But until it becomes prominent, we don't call it by that category. You know what I'm saying? It's not that in Manomoy there's not an understanding of we're not the body. Right? And that we're acting according to that. But the prominence is the performance of one's duty. Right? Vijnanamoy will be, then we're not, it's not karma yoga, it's jnana yoga. Right? So then we're going to be performing the activities. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's your vijnanamoy will be jnana yoga, right? Your manamoy, that will be karma yoga, in as nishkam karma yoga, right? In its proper standing. If we're talking about the consciousness being there, right? We're not talking about someone who's on that platform doing their duties but for sense gratification or for other, you know what I'm saying? So there's where you're situated and then there's where your consciousness is. Right, so ideally they both match, right? And then your artha and kama, right? Your anamoy and pranamoy, those will be sakha, right? But one will be obviously, you know, grossly selfish, you know, the anamoy, and pranamoy will mean you'll be worried about others' sense gratification. So it appears like nishkam, but it's not actually, because the extended sense gratification is still for our benefit. It makes us feel, you know, good, you know, like that. So it's the inspiration is what we're going to get from it, the benefit of it, rather than it's our duty.
It seems like this is where materialists often get it wrong, where they think this is why there is no real good, because when you do good, you feel good, and therefore it's ultimately selfish.
Yeah, the devotees will also think like that. The point is if you feel good about anything, it can't be spiritual. So it's got to be you're completely, you know, just, you know, how you say, completely unsheltered, you know, situation. Then that's spiritual. But no, it's connected to Krishna. It's good. Does that make sense? So this whole point of this process, right? And then Anandamaya, then that is your on the liberated platform. But it can either be only on the liberated platform but haven't developed prema, or you develop prema. Right? Mm-hmm. So someone on Bhava Bhakti, that is Anandamaya. Mm-hmm. But they haven't necessarily developed that prema. Mm-hmm. It also includes the impersonalists that make it to the Brahman platform. But because they're only there temporarily, they don't figure so prominently in the equation. But they're there. Right. So it's prominent. So the liberation element is the prominent. Therefore, it's ananda. But when it's there but not the prominent, it's vijnanamo. You know, when there's just a touch of it, then it's the manamo. Right. And generally, anamoy, pranamoy, there's no concept of liberation. Even duties are hard to, you know, understand, except for what is good for, you know, the general group, you know, the extended sense gratification.
Would it also
right? That's the Dharma.
Would it also be like very short term? Dharma could be like what perceive a result within the short.
Yes, means you're doing it to get a result rather than doing it because you're supposed to do it. Right? Does that make sense? So he'll be pious because the person is situated in performing his duties, right? He's situated in Manamoy, but his consciousness is not. Mm-hmm. His consciousness is in Anamoy or Pranamoy. Mm-hmm. Right? Just like the person in Vijnanamoy is situated, he's performing the duties of a Manamoy, of Dharma, but his consciousness is in. Mm-hmm. Right? So in other words, the solid situation on the material platform is performing the activities recommended in the Vedas. Mm-hmm. Right? Is that what it is? Though someone may be doing more towards karma and someone more towards yama. Mm-hmm. But that's the recommended position. Because then it's fruitful. Because from dharma comes artha. Mm-hmm. Therefore karma. Right? Does that make sense? But otherwise, without Dharma, there won't be those things. Without Dharma, then how are you going to get the moksha? Right? Because if it's a whimsical lifestyle, how that will result in spiritual understanding. Is that something? Right? Yeah, so in other words, everything's connected to the Lord, and so this concept that there is something different, that's only our conditioning. We think there's something different, but there isn't actually something different. Right? It doesn't exist. It's only a concept that it's there. But in reality, it's not. The living entity cannot be separated from Krishna. For want of sufficient knowledge in the absolute science, we are now covered with illusion, and therefore we think that we are separate from Krishna, although we are. I'm just used to single pages. Ha. We are. Although we are separate parts of Krishna, we are nevertheless non-different from Him. The bodily difference of the living entities is maya, or not actual fact. Right? It means we're thinking that this living entity is, you know, tall, this one's short, this one's fat, this one's thin, this one's old, this one's young. Those aren't actual differences. The souls are all the same. Those are the condition. That's the covering. It's what he's covered by. You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say you have a bunch of people and they've all fallen into the mud, right? So now, depending on what mud they fall into, we categorize them. You know, his more clay mud and his is more old funky mud, you know, stinky mud, you know, like that. And he's just kind of splattered with mud, so that's different than the guy that's completely covered with mud. So they have all different names, and so they're identified with that, and because of that, it changes how you deal with them. All the social position, depending upon what mud they're covered with.
Yes.
Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's not real. The point is, the souls are all the same. They're all servants of Krishna. So you can deal with everybody as servant of Krishna. Right? So that doesn't change. The bodily difference of the living entities is maya, or not actually fact. We are all meant to satisfy Krishna. By maya alone, Arjuna thought that the temporary bodily relationship with his kinsman was more important than his eternal spiritual relationship with Krishna. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted towards this end, that a living being, as Krishna's eternal servitor, cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being and identity apart from Krishna is called maya. So here again, the whole teaching of the Gita...
Mm.
Right? Again, Prabhupada's bringing these out. The whole teaching is this, is we're not separated from Krishna. Right? That we're meant to serve Krishna. Right? That the result of all our activities is meant to please Krishna. So this is the whole teaching. So you can't be separated. So it's more than just, okay, we're here, we think. The point is it's an illusion to think anything's different. Right, we're sitting on the floor, we're held up, but that potency is Krishna. So Krishna, by Krishna's mercy, there's a floor, so it's him, right? He's the columns, he's holding up the, you know, the ceiling. He's the ceiling, you know,
which is nice right now.
It's quite nice. So it's all his mercy. So we're surrounded by him. You see something, how can you see something unless, where does the power of seeing come from? That's Krishna. So that means it's Krishna who's seeing. Right? We think, I'm seeing, but we're being seen. Only because we're being seen can we see. Right? And then how we see Krishna, who is seeing us, that's how he relates to us. You understand? Because he sees, we can see. And then with that, our own power of seeing, how we identify what we see with that power of seeing, which is Krishna, that's how Krishna relates with us. Right? Does that make sense? So we only see a column. Therefore, he appears to us just as a column. But if we understand, no, it's Krishna who's doing it by his mercy, then he reciprocates as being able to perceive him there. Does that make sense? So one can see Krishna everywhere in everything. So that means one's always surrounded by Krishna. Right? It may be the manifestation is through the Brahman, but the Brahman is, as said, his personal effulgence. So it's still him. Right? We have this idea that this Brahman is an impersonal. So therefore Krishna's entered everything and all this and that. It's impersonal. Does that make sense? But it's personal. So that means everything that's important, we're surrounded as by Krishna. Yes. So that way we're just seeing that elements. Now, that's a first step. The next step would be, well, what are we supposed to do for Krishna? Right? What are our duties in this and that? Since it's all Krishna. Then the third step is that, how to please Krishna with this environment. So it's not a matter of that it is Krishna or that, I have duties to perform in connection to Krishna. No, it's just automatically what's there, how to use that for Krishna.
I know some devotees, they see things and it appears it doesn't exist and they just kind of trying to preach to other people that they are those who see those subtle things and energies and Mahaprabhu manifest through them.
Yeah, but that's not what we're talking about. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That's their own mind. Here we're talking about, that's why Krishna goes through and for three chapters explains where you can see him. Right? So in other words, that all those different things, he's the strength of the strong. All right, why do you build a column? Should it be weak or should it be strong? Right, so therefore he is the strength of the column. Right, but we'll generally think he's the strength of the strong. We'll just see some big 7 foot 500 kilo guy there, like that, and then we'll say, okay, he's strong, so Krishna's that strength. But the point is anything that's strong is Krishna. Right? You have a stick, right? Why do you get a walking stick? Because it's weak? No, because it's strong. So that strength in that walking stick is Krishna. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the point is that element of strength is so there's so many places to manage. But at least we find it in one place. Does that make sense? So one place is there. So the point is then when they make it up and they see Mahaprabhu and everything, is that great, but the point is now what are you going to do about it? So is the point that I am absorbed in experiencing how Krishna is in everything, or I am going to serve Krishna who is in everything? So if I'm experiencing it, it's nice, but it's still about myself. So the point is even if we're just taking it that there's some substance to what they see. But the point is that that's the end? Now that's you're the advanced person? No, now you're the smaller of the. You know what I'm saying? Just like let's say you have a 15-year-old. They're the biggest kid. That 15-year-olds look back. So they look at the 14, 13, 12 on down, and they're the biggest guy. Right? So therefore you can do that. But when you're 16, you're an adult, they don't look back, they look forward. Right? So they're looking at others. So anyway, from 16 up to 29, they basically see the same kind of age group. You're a little bit, old, but you're kind of like the same, equals. But they're the youngest of the adults. You know what I'm saying? So the point means if they're putting themselves in a more advanced category, but the point is that's only the beginning, because they're only appreciating the Brahman element. But you're thinking, you're acting as if that's it, you're perfect. So that's a neophyte on the adult platform. if there's some substance. But the way of application is just showing that they're bigger than everybody. But that's what the adolescent does. You know what I'm saying? That's what the punk kid does. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the difficulty with it, is that they should actually be looking the other way, but they're looking back this way. Right? If there's some substance. Same time as by the sounds that generally when they do those things, that's there may have been some experience, but then they're trying to ride on that and get whatever they can out of it. So whether it's actually being experienced, they're remembering an experience.
It's not a constant experience.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. Otherwise, if it's a constant experience, then why would they be dealing, how can you get benefit from it if you're experiencing it, right? Just like if you're asleep, you can't get the benefit of thinking, I'm sleeping so nicely. Right? You're either asleep or you're awake. If you're in a kirtan, and it's a great kirtan, that when you stop and talk to others, hey, wow, isn't this a great kirtan? Are you enjoying the kirtan?
No,
it's stopped. This is the meaning of aparoksha. Aparoksha, it's experience, but you can't observe it. So if they're able to observe it, they're not experiencing it. Does that make sense?
It's already past experience.
It's already past experience. Because if it's present experience, it's continuous, they won't talk about it that way. They won't get into this like, holy. Because that means then you're concentrating on what you're feeling. So that's how you tell the difference. If they're explaining what's there and putting the subtle into observable definition, that means it's a present experience. But if they're talking about their experience of it, it's a past experience. Past. Is that make sense? So that's how one can, you know, tell the difference on whether these kind of things are real or not. You know, so they're excited about that they're on that platform of experience. That's one thing. But if they're excited about the experience and explaining to you the experience so that you can experience it, it's a different thing. Does that make sense? You know, Prabhupada's experiencing Krishna consciousness. And he's explaining it so you can also experience it. He's not talking about how he was experiencing it. You know, it's not about his experience. He's experiencing it, he's explaining it so you can experience it. But if they're explaining their experience, that means then they can't be experiencing it. You know what I'm saying? Means if you're... means... you're experiencing something, you can explain the experience, not what your experience is. Does that make sense? Because as soon as you're explaining what you're feeling, then it moves into the past. You know what I'm saying? Does that make any sense? Yeah? Did you catch that?
When I explain what I'm feeling,
it means like you're seeing something. It's a very nice scenery.
Yeah.
You can say, okay, the trees are very, you know, green and beautiful. The birds are chirping and all that. It's very bright and you know, happy day. But you know, but when you start saying, you know, but I'm feeling so good in this kind of thing, now you're not explaining the thing. You've moved to what you're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but you can maybe explain what I'm experiencing. But the whole point is the devotees never explain what they're experiencing. The acharyas, nobody does that.
Because what you're experiencing is your own emotions, not the
same. Yeah, it's you know, so your own emotions, but it's not dynamic anymore because it's just your side of it. So the acharyas don't explain that. Yes.
An example for one time one person was saying to Prabhupada, when I chant Hare Krishna, I see some special blue light. And Prabhupada said, Don't worry, just go on chanting and it disappears.
Yes, sir. Yeah, it'll go away. Yeah. So the whole point is, it's not about our experience. You'll experience something. But it's the experience in the dynamic of its continuance. Mm. Right? Because Krishna consciousness is continuous. Mm. Right? It's not in the future, it's not in the past. Mm. It's in the present. So it's continuous. Does that make sense?
Is this Sahaja style of?
It'll have the, we would generally categorize it as these are symptoms of Sahaja, because they make something advanced make it into something easy, into something cheap. So that's the whole point. That's why one avoids a certain mentality. Because the point is this dynamic. As we said, even if one is experiencing that, that's just preliminary. Levels. That's the understanding of Brahman, and we said that the experience of the person is unlimitedly times greater than that. So therefore, it's nice. It's a good foundation, but it's not actually what you're looking for. So one shouldn't consider I'm advanced because of that, right? You know, you're advanced because of the personal aspect. But in any case, at no time does the devotee think he's advanced anyway, because that will block one from developing prana. Right? Because as we said, it means here it's I'm the controller and enjoyer. Right? When you get rid of that, the Purusha Bhav, then there's the element that I am advanced and I'm the guru of devotees. Does that make sense? So these are the subtle forms of that will block, you know, bhava moving to prema. Right? I'm the controller and enjoyer keeps you from moving from the conditioned stage to the liberated stage. Right? Because there is no I'm the controller and enjoyer on the platform of bhava, but one can still have these subtle things. Right? No, it's not a matter of that. We were talking this in specific as somebody's talking about, you know, wherever they look, they see Mahaprabhu and this kind of experience and, you know, leaves rustle and, oh, that's this. And, you know, all this kind of so-called, you know, ecstasy. They read something, you know, in the past times and then they feel that that's what's happening to them. But that's Sahaja, because even if it is happening to them, you don't explain it like that. That's what we're saying. The acharyas never explain it like that. So if you're explaining it like that, there's something wrong. Is that anything? Okay. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted towards this end, that a living being, as Krishna's eternal servitor, cannot be separated from Krishna, and his sense of being an identity apart from Krishna is called Maya. So here it's not complete, because we may understand that we're not the material world, but we're not seeing ourselves as Krishna's eternal servitor. Because otherwise we may see, I'm not the body, I'm the soul, but it's still separate from Krishna. Because unless we see I'm servitor. So that's why the impersonalist is not complete. Because they're Brahman realized, but they don't see themselves as an eternal servitor. Because the reality is Krishna is a person, and we're a person. That's the reality. That the nature of the people is spiritual and eternal and Brahman. That's another thing. You know what I'm saying? It's just like you relate to the other person because he's a person. You know, it's not that, you know, hey, I got skin and you got skin, so therefore, you know, hey. You know what I'm saying? That's not the point. Or you're in the house, so it's not because of the house, that's why you're relating. You're relating to the person in the house. You understand? Otherwise, if you're relating to the house, you're relating to a third party. So the relationship isn't direct. So we say direct relationship. We mean with the person. Because the relationship with Brahman is not technically direct. Right? You can directly perceive, but the relationship is not direct. Because what is the relationship? What, there's no manifestation. There's only yourself. Paramatma is there, but it's specifically localized. It's still, he's just organizing that Brahman experience. You know what I'm saying? In other words, there's Brahman, means the platform of the spiritual existence. Then there's the activities of spiritual existence. But then there's the mood of affection and exchange in spiritual existence. Right? That's expressed through the activities, the spiritual activities. You understand? So being spiritually situated, you, with that spiritual situation, perform spiritual activities. And in that spiritual situation, in the, with those spiritual activities, you express your love for Krishna. Right? Or to reverse it, to express our love for Krishna, right? Then we engage in spiritual activities in a spiritual environment. Does that make sense? But the focus is on Krishna, the person. So it's not complete until it's Bhagavan realization. Because the other two are real. They exist. They're non-different. You know what I'm saying? So you're having a nice time with somebody is because of the place and the activities you're doing. But it's the experience of that interaction that's important. It's not actually the place or the activity. You know what I'm saying? You have some friends, you could be standing on a corner, sitting on a bench, you know, in your house, driving in the car. It doesn't matter the situation. The relationship of friendship is what's important. Right, you could be laughing and joking, you could be serious, you could be studying something, you know, you could be, cooking lunch. It doesn't matter the activity, it's the experience of interacting as friends. Does that make sense? But that interaction of friends is the stai bhav, the foundational rasa. But then all the differences and situations and experiences and all that, that adds flavor to it. So that's why all the other four aspects of rasa are there. They create all the variety and everything in which that is expressed. Does that make sense? Is that clear? So that's therefore, you know, as a Krishna's eternal servitor. So it's more than just, okay, that's a fact. No, it's how you think. You know what I'm saying? That's the difference. To say, oh, we've heard all this. But we have heard all this. But then the next thing is contemplating it and applying it. And then realizing it. Right? And it's this symbol. The whole teaching of the Gita is targeted towards this end. The living being as Krishna's eternal servitor cannot be separated from Krishna. This sense of being and his sense of being and identity apart from Krishna is called Maya. Right? So if he identifies his being as separate from Krishna, that's Maya. He sees it in connection with Krishna. So that would mean even he sees himself as Brahman, if it's not connected to Krishna, it's still Maya. Because that's why the impersonalist, he can only be on the spiritual platform temporarily. Because it is Maya. It's an illusion to think that the soul is separate from the personality of Godhead. Right? But, as we said, the situation and the activities. Right? Spiritual world, the Dham is non-different from Krishna. The activities going on in the Dham are non-different from Krishna. But still, those two aren't the focus. The focus is the interaction with Krishna. Right? So everything is explained in relationship to Krishna. Does that make sense? So this being a reflection of there, you have the situations and you have the activities, right? And you have the mood. Right? So the mood is I'm the control and enjoy. We change that to no, I am the servant of Krishna. Right? Then we see the situation. It's also Krishna. So just as it's Krishna's potency there, it's Krishna's potency here. just there is very special. So that's a full manifestation of potency. Here it's nothing special, it's just a spark. So just the spark runs the situations and the activities. So nothing special. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So when we say that we engage in spiritual activities, and at the same time we say that a bunch of friends can do whatever, or it's not important where they are, what they're doing, how exactly, is this because we have a tendency to forget Krishna that we engage?
No, I was showing the reflection.
Yeah.
Is that it's Krishna's potency that makes the spiritual world work. So that's why they can see Krishna in anything. But they're going to immediately remember the person.
Yeah.
So the situation will remind them of the person. The activity will remind them of the person. Right? But here we start off understanding we're not the material nature. Right? So we've negated that. And that we are Brahman. So we start with, okay, the situation. And it connected to Krishna. Then the activity is connected to Krishna. Then, you know, Krishna is a person. Yeah, I don't mean Krishna is a person by fact. I mean Krishna is a person in realization. You know, by experience. Does that make sense? So, in other words, we're going through that whole process. So we're showing the difference between Phala Bhakti and Upaya Bhakti. The Upaya, we're having to go through these stages. We're not the material world. We're spiritual. And then, but there's spiritual activity, and those activities are meant to please Krishna. So basically, we have to go through four stages. Right? But those on the platform of prema, there's only one. That's the situation. Because it includes the other. The person includes the activities in the situation. Just like we said, the body is the field. Because the field is the situation and activities. So Krishna is the field, Krishna is the activities. Right? He is the situation. He is existence. He is knowledge and activity. He is, you know, Ananda. But the point is it's him as the person and interacting with the person that's important. Right? So, therefore, the situations, the activities of the situations, those are secondary. Does that make sense? They're only in support of interacting with the person. You know what I'm saying? That's what I'm saying. That's an example of the friends. The important thing is interacting with your friends. So, okay, so what situation and what activities are we going to experience today? Oh, we could do this. Oh, we did that last week. Okay, then something else. But what are they talking about? Situations and activities. Right? But if they miss the point of the friendship, then it's not satisfying. You understand? Relationships maintain because you're getting the proper experience in the relationship. Right? And the situation and activities is secondary. Right? But if all that they have is that secondary consideration, those are called shallow relationships. You know, that group of, you know, that gang of boys, and they hang out and do all this and that. Generally, all they talk about is third party stuff. It's nothing about each other, really. So that's shallow, because all they have is the situation. The situations and activities of friends, though they don't actually experience friendship, relationship. You know what I'm saying? So for them, it's very important that since only certain situations and only certain activities they will consider good. And so, but if it's bad, then it wasn't good. They won't be, it means they won't consider there's a relationship. But someone who actually has a relationship, whether the situations are nice or not, it works. You know what I'm saying? You know, you want to eat something like this and you end up at some crazy little place, every place else is closed, and you only get some, you know, some weirdo like chili pakoras or something like that. The friends will sit down and laugh about it. Right? But the punk kids, yeah, forget this, I'm not eating that crap. Yeah. This, you know. Yeah. So there's nothing to base a relationship on. because the situation and the activity isn't what they would call as the common ground. So it's shallow. You know, like the cheerleader, she sees some nice boy and then, you know, they go out together, and then she notices, you know, while they're sitting there eating their burger, that he has a wart on his thumb. That's it, bang. There's no relationship anymore. She drops him like that.
I didn't catch what he has on the thumb.
Thumb. A wart.
Wart?
Like a big spot.
There's funny little things that grow out of the skin and they look a little kind of bumpy like that, you know. Witches always have them on the end of the nose, you know, with the hair growing out of it. Yeah,
that's how it's spot.
Yeah. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is that there's only certain things that's there. It's not that there are certain situations that are favorable for the rasa. You know what I'm saying? No, it's a matter of that those situations aren't there. There is no rasa. That's the difference.
And then some would have a tendency to go into this sahajya mood with explaining the rasa when it's not really there as a kind of, or am I speculating?
It's another thing if you're sharing past experiences. Okay. Oh, you know, they're sitting there, you know, stuck in the train station, the train didn't show up, it's going to come after 3 hours. So what they're going to talk about, with either they're going to get into something now, find something now, or they'll talk about, hey, remember when we did this and that, and the, you know, like that. So it's something there, but it means there's a fine point there. It's not that you can't explain experiences. We're talking about when people are talking about spiritual experiences. You know? And they're not just talking about it as facts, but, you know, the voice changes. You know, yeah, you know, that kind of thing like that. That's where you start knowing something's not going right. You know what I'm saying? Because they don't use that all the time. If they always talk nice and gentle, and that's fine. You know, but they only use it for here, then you know there's something. You know. Yeah.
Maharaj, from your explanation, it looks like for a devotee on the Brahma Buddha platform, there's no Karana Sharir, but that little contamination is still there, like the hinka in the pot.
Yeah, so that's why the association of the nitya siddhas is important. So the principle is the association of Vaishnavas and learning about Krishna from them is an eternal principle. It works on all levels. Right? It means the person on the platform of prema, then that is their eternal situation of being with devotees and discussing about Krishna. Right? So it just nourishes the prema. But before that, in bhava, without that association, you won't get the prema. And when in the conditioned state, without that association, you won't get free from conditioning. Right? So and what does Krishna do all day? Associate with Vaishnavas. So if you don't like to associate with Vaishnavas, what do you have in common with Krishna? What's the common ground? Because as we're explaining, it's the persons who are important, not the situations. It doesn't say. It says approach a bona fide spiritual master. Associate with Vaishnavas. It doesn't say, you know, make sure on a, you know, nice sunny day out in a nice meadow with wildflowers and birds chirping and butterflies, you know, flitting and, you know, sun rays, you know, how you say, doing whatever they do and all this and creeks babbling and all that, then, you know, associate with devotees. It doesn't talk situations. Right? And if it talks activities, it's talking eternal activity. Hear from the Vaishnavas. Associate with Vaishnavas. It means, in other words, the activities of someone who's Krishna conscious. Right? And the perspective that they, how they see the situation. So they teach you how to see the situation. They teach you what are the appropriate activities. And they teach you what is the result and goal of those activities. Does that make sense? So the point is it always comes back to association with devotees. But unless you see yourself as a servitor, how are you going to associate with devotees? Because that's how they see themselves. Right? If I'm just Brahman, nice, but, you know. Okay. 436. Right, and so this is fourth chapter, right? This is Jnana Yoga, right? So there's all this depth to it. So it's not that there's going to be different knowledge as we progress through the different books. It's just going deeper and deeper into what's already there. Does that make sense? It doesn't change because it says this is the whole teaching. So it's not that when you get to the Bhagavatam, then, well, actually, that some think that was the whole teaching. And for neophytes, that is, and now it's actually this. And then Chaitanya Charitamrita, then it's another. No, that is the whole teaching. But what it means to be Krishna's eternal servitor, who is Krishna, right? That we're not separated from Krishna. What does that mean? What is that?
As living entities, our only thing we can work is to desire to become, to get a relationship with Krishna.
Yeah. It means our desire to be connected to Krishna. That's what we have. It means that's what we're in control of. Yeah. But the point is it's just like now. That's all we're in control of now. But we don't mind that. You know, the modes of nature have arranged, you know, the body and how the body functions and the situations and the activities and managing those activities and managing the results. We're not complaining because as what we're desiring is what we're able to be involved in. So it doesn't change in the spiritual world. Then it's the same thing, but it's being conducted by Sandini, Samvit, and Hladini potencies. Right? That's the original. The reflection is goodness, passion, and ignorance. So everything works by there. But no one minds. But at the same time, you don't need to see it like that. Here we have to see it because we're controlled by the modes. We identify with them. So we're not that. But we are servant to Krishna. So once we identify there, there's no need to separate these energies and see them separately. Right? Up to the platform of liberation, it's necessary to see that way. But once one's liberated, there's no need to see that way anymore. Right? That's the example of the wood, fire burning up wood. Right? So if wood is material conditioning and fire is the knowledge, like that, then when the wood's burnt up, there's no fire. So that knowledge burns up the material existence, and after that it's not necessary. Because the result that you want to get is there. You notice how you said? You know, you have a can. You have a can opener. You've opened the can. Do you need the can opener? No, the can's open. You understand? You know, it's like you want to go to sleep, so you make the bed ready. And then you get in bed. Now, do you need to make the bed while you're in bed? No, it's already there. So that's the point. Once one comes to prema, these preliminary things aren't necessary because the result of it's already there. Yes.
Sakshi Mata, she discusses philosophy with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Doesn't mean you can't if the situation is there. Point is if you know Krishna, you know everything. So it's not that they can, but that's not what's of interest. You know what I'm saying? The guy who's racing the car, for him it's the handling of the car. It's not the decals on the outside. You know, but for the kids, wow, check out the decals. You know, like that. Because that's all they can get is the externals. The experiences, but it's not that they can't explain. You know, yeah, you know, so this company, they get, you know, they're giving us money and then we're able to, you know, do what we're doing and therefore we have their decal on the car. They can explain that. But that's not what's of interest to them.
The situation we are seeing favorable or unfavorable situation, then like we are looking at duality. So that is Madhyamadhikari platform.
No, dualities is more looking at it from the neophyte platform.
And when someone is a pure devotee, then he is looking at the relationship. So for him, there is no like favorable or unfavorable situation. Any situation.
No, any situation is something there. The point is you can remember Krishna in any situation. Is that some sense? Yeah. So that's that. It's not a matter of it's hot, so then I can't serve Krishna. It's cold, I can't serve Krishna. When it's hot, you can serve. When it's cold, you can serve. That's the thing. You're not affected by the duality. So that's why the neophyte would be the most affected by that. The Madhyama is not so affected. But he will act through his conditioned nature. But that's expected. Arjuna is not asked to not function as a Kshatriya. So there's no need to act outside of one's nature. The point is the nature being engaged in Krishna service. Like, do we expect Mother Yashoda to act outside of her nature as Mother of Krishna? You know, we're not going, wow, you're so attached to that, you know, it's like that, you know, it's like that. You know, like that. You know, spiritual, be free. You know, why you have to be, you know, caught up in all this, you know, restrictions, you know.
Go for it.
So there's no need, right? It's perfect because it's connected to Krishna. The point is if your nature is fully connected to Krishna, then it will be okay. So it's not a problem that the conditioned nature is fully connected to Krishna. It means you're going to have some situation and some activity. So part of the situation is the particular body you have. And so we happen to have one made out of the modes of nature. So therefore, that's what we use. So it's not a problem that's used. So you can only do certain things. So that's what we do. It's not a need of doing something else. Is it? Yeah. Four 36. Even if you are considered to be the most sinful of all sinners, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you will be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. Right. So even your sinful of all sinners. Right. So it means you have to be really sinful. You know, like the man's man. You know, so that the sinful of all sinners. You know, it doesn't say even if you're the most sinful but you're the most sinful of all sinners. Yeah, you know, the thing said, you know, just make it very clear. But when you're situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, you actually understand who you are. Then you can cross over the material. Doesn't matter, there are no other qualifications than the association of the devotees and understanding and practicing that instruction that they give. It doesn't matter what it is, all that can be removed. Like that. We're the one that thinks it's very great.
Because we think 100 years is a long time.
Yeah, because we think 100 years is a long time, or because we think that we're the controlling enjoyer, so what's against that is bad, you know, like that. You know, that the body is the real thing, so something done with the body, then the body is sinful. You know, no. So the whole problem is consciousness. The Lord saves those who associate with saintly persons. Proper understanding of one's constitutional position in relationship to Krishna is so nice that it can at once lift one from the struggle for existence which goes on in the ocean of nescience. This material world, so here, knowledge means constitutional position, because that's transcendental. This material world is sometimes regarded as an ocean of nescience, and sometimes as a blazing forest. Right? So here, you know, an ocean of nescience or a blazing forest. Either one is dangerous. If you're in the middle of it, it's not going to be auspicious. However, in the ocean, however expert a swimmer one may be, the struggle for existence is very severe. If someone comes forward and lifts the struggling swimmer from the ocean, he is the greatest savior. Perfect knowledge received from the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the path of liberation. The boat of Krishna consciousness is very simple, but at the same time, the most sublime. So again here, Prabhupada, how simple it is. Right? It is that simple. We like to make it complicated. Okay. So here, now if we now sometimes there's ocean of Neshan, some blazing fire, but here we're talking knowledge. So what's the opposite of knowledge? Right? Ignorance. So therefore the ocean is, will be the most appropriate example. Blazing fire, because it's struggle. But the blazing fire will be connected with what? What will that represent? Right? It means one is the ignorance.
Suffering.
What's the other side? Lust. Right? So I am the controller, that's the ocean. I am the enjoyer, that's the forest fire. Right? Does that make sense? So then that forest fire, so then being there, one is overwhelmed by lust. And so everything is, you know, burns one that one wants and desires and needs. And so there's no relief when suffering. And the other is because of ignorance. You don't know who you are. Therefore, you're just washed around and your experiences, you don't establish where you're going. If you're out in the middle of the ocean, you do not establish where you're going next. Right? The ocean just washes you this way and that one that way, and the wind blows, so you go this way, and then the wave throws you that way. Right? And then there's the fish. Yes.
What do you have on those?
Well, then analyze why you should be doing it, and what's and then what's the problem with the. In other words, take okay, what position you're in. Follow the path of doing the duty. What will it get you? How will that be? What will the result be? Follow the path of not doing your duty, and then where will that end up? And then, with your intelligence, compare the two. Like that. And after a while, then the mind's going to have to kind of agree. Right? Because you have to understand, just because we've had a bad experience doesn't mean that the principle is bad. Right? In other words, we've had problem with parents. And so, therefore, we think, you know, all authority. But other people have fine experience with their parents. So in other words, know that the misgiving is due to your specific conditioning, due to your specific material desire, which will change. What's the misgiving today, tomorrow will be, you know, what you're fanatic about on the material platform. You understand? So here's the boat of Krishna consciousness, very simple, but at the same time the most sublime. So we have this element. It's the whole teaching. It's simple, but at the same time as the depth of it is unlimited. It's the most simple, but it's the most sublime. Right? 437. As blazing fire turns firewood to ashes, O Arjuna, so does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes all reactions to material activities. So it will burn everything, that, and so it's not left. So then one is liberated. Right? So that's the point of the knowledge. It burns up, because it is the opposite. Right? The fire is the lust. So that's controlled by knowledge. Right? Because we thought, I'm the controller and enjoyer, therefore the love is converted into lust. Now, if we understand I'm just not the body, I'm servant of Krishna, then that transforms the lust back into love. Is that a thing?
Knowledge is like the key point.
Knowledge is the key point, yes. But that comes from the association of devotees. Right? So we say, when you are situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge means... you're in that boat because that's where the spiritual master is. That's where the Vaishnavas are. They're on the boat. We're the ones in the ocean. So they pick us up from the ocean onto the boat. So therefore, when we're situated in the boat of transcendental knowledge, It's not just when we have knowledge. No, when we have knowledge from the association of devotees. So that's the association is the important thing.
All right. It's very simple. It's like we get caught up in terms of confidential, more confidential, most confidential. But those are, the start of those three different categories is really simple. I'm not the body, and my relationship.
Yeah, it's just deeper understandings of the same thing. Right, that's because when Krishna says, the most confidential knowledge, then he says the most 18th chapter. So he's already said that before, but it's going taking it to another level, another depth. It's adding some more appreciation to it. So it's the same thing, but it's just you add more elements.
So it doesn't have to be mystifying. It's just
No, that's the point. It's not mystical. So that's why when he was talking to devotees, they tend to try to make it mystical. It's not mystical. Because generally, he's mentioning something there. So that I would get an idea that comes from that specific circle. Because just as you see in, let's say, like Christianity, like Western Christianity, in Western Europe, then, it's the religion, and then there's, so much of the authority, those elements are what's prominent. The hierarchy, the structure, like that. When you move to the East Bloc, then it's the emotions of it. Like in Poland, you have the Black Madonna and things like that. So they're much more into pictures of Jesus as a baby with his mother. So Mother Mary is much more prominent for them. So the sentiment of it, the emotion of it, meaning that kind of personal element, not the sentiment meaning in faith, the sentiment meaning in the relationship. Does that make sense? Right? And then when you go farther east, you go into Russia, then it's all about mystical, the mystical elements of Christianity. So they get that, so the mystique of it is very much. So that would be what he would be talking about.
Is it the opposite of the further west you get from them?
Yeah, then it's just faith and guitars, yeah. Faith and guitars. Right? Because there it's not about authority, it's not about that, it's just having the feeling and being in that feeling, so it's sentimental, but it doesn't have any structure. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Well, I said like the Polish. That means that they'll go to church every day. The other places will go once a week, and if they're really fired up, they'll go again on Wednesday. They go every day, sometimes twice a day. So structure is there, authority is there. But it's the mood is more important. So it just has that the mystical. So we get distracted by these elements. The point is while you're experiencing the mystical, where's the interaction with Krishna? That's the point, is that it nice, but what's the service to Krishna? That's why the example is given in the Nectar Devotion that the Raktak is fanning Krishna, and because of fanning, the ecstasy is coming, which is not a problem. But the ecstasy is creating tears. And so he can't see Krishna, so he doesn't know he can't see how to fan properly. So therefore, then it's an impediment to his service. Right? So that's the point, is that it's the service, not the experience, that's important to the devotee. The service is important. It generates the experience.
Rather than trying to cash in on the experience, you just keep on investing.
Yeah, it's not that, well, that's giving, so therefore they just get off into their ecstasy, but then the service isn't going on. You understand? If they're sitting alone and thinking of Krishna and then ecstatic symptoms are there, they don't have a problem with that. Because the service is remembering. You know what I'm saying? But if the service is Archana, then it gets in the way. Is that that? Okay. Sambandha Gyan received in the association of devotees destroys all karmic reactions. Perfect knowledge of self and super self and of their relationship is compared herein to fire. This fire not only burns up all reactions to impious activities, but also all reactions to pious activities, turning them to ashes. Right? Because piety also, material piety is going to get in the way. Because then you just have to do what's good and nice. Because all material piety is geared at what aspect of someone's existence? You have consciousness, you have the subtle body, you have the gross body. What's it aimed at?
Subtle body?
Subtle body, feeding kids in Biafra.
Gross body?
Gross body. You know, seeing that, you know, the kids have a loving environment. Mm. Subtle body. Does it ever get to consciousness? Never. So all piety is dealing, material piety, since it's material, it can only deal with the gross and subtle bodies. It can't deal with the soul. Spiritual understanding deals with the soul. So therefore, sinful activity is activity that's not recommended. It's not recommended to use in Krishna's service. Pious activity is activities that are recommended to use in Krishna's service. But the attachment to piety and impiety, both of them are not useful in Krishna's service. Because then the activity is more important. Right? Just like we have an element, we want to broadcast Krishna consciousness, right? So people should know about Krishna. Right? But now, if we're attached to the point of no, we can't broadcast like this, we have to put it into very pleasant language and not step on anybody's toes and apologize for everything that they think we're doing wrong, though if technically, according to the Vedas, we're not doing wrong. They're wrong. The mode of ignorance, you think religion's your religion's religion. So we're apologizing for that. That kind of communication, right, is not spiritual. One is looking at material piety. So it's not spiritual. Right? Does that make sense? Time, place, and circumstance, you're talking to a particular person, you talk in a way that they'll appreciate. But we never have to apologize for Krishna consciousness. We never have to adjust Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? And they'll say, no, but it is time, place. No, it's not. Because if it was, it would be pure Vedanta. But what they're trying to present is Krishna consciousness through the eyes of a pious person. Oh, we're feeding people, we're doing this, it's education, it's charity, it's all that. That's why we're great people. That's why you want to join our movement. You know, but if that's the thing, they already have their charities, they already have their church. And if that's, and they're not satisfied because they're already doing charity, they're already going to church. They're not satisfied. So what's wrong? Because they don't have Sambandha Gyan. That's what we have to get. Do you understand? So the point is it goes beyond. So this perfect knowledge or Sambandha Gyan of the self, super self, and their relation, right? Because that's what it meant. If you just know the self and super self, it's not enough, right? Because these other philosophies, you know, we'll get into next year, they teach about the self and God, but they don't teach a relationship. Right? In most of all the Vedic philosophies, right? Then they the word Gnostic? Would that be the word term? They're all Gnostic.
Astic.
They're all Astic. They all believe in the Veda. Right? And so in all of them, you're the soul. Right? And there's activities based on the authority of the Veda. And there's the Supreme. All of them. Right? But the difference is none of them teach, you know, except for Vyas, none of them teach the relationship between the soul and God. They don't teach that. Right? Means that you're the soul, you're Brahman. So you don't belong here. So by, you know, or you do belong here, right? So if you belong here, then by good pious activities, you'll enjoy eternally. Because the result of good act is good result. So if you do that, then if you do everything perfectly, then eternally you'll be happy. Right? And God, you know, gives the results of your activities. So you've mentioned the living entity, you've mentioned the activities, you mentioned God. But the relationship between the living entity and God has been missed. Or the others is that, you know, we're not the body, we're the soul, and we're suffering in the material world. And so therefore, through logic, through knowledge of you know, atomic theory, right, through analyzation of the material phenomena, or, you know, or through yoga, or through Vedanta, right, you'll liberate yourself from the material existence. And God is the one who grants that. But still, no relationship with God is explained. Does that make sense? You know, or in the, you know, your world philosophies, you know, there's the soul, whatever they think it is, and there's God, and you do good work, and you'll go to heaven. Where's the relationship with God? Not explained. You know what I'm saying? Or the other. You may, there's you, you know, there is no soul. It's an illusion that you think there is one. There's the Supreme. And by following a path of negation, then you'll elevate yourself to that supreme platform. But what's the relationship? There isn't one. You understand? So, they talk about useful elements in the way of dealing with the situation and activities. But they don't talk about the relationship with God. So that's what's unique to the Vaishnava philosophy. Is actually discuss relationship with God. You know, what it looks like. Okay, so that knowledge is compared to a fire, which will burn to ashes the wood of material existence. There are many stages of reaction. Reaction in the making, reaction fructifying, reaction already achieved, and reaction a priori. What's a priori?
Yes, first
Just now coming. Okay, so already achieved what's there. Okay, so they put the achieved in just before. So reaction in the making. Very dynamic here. Reaction in the making. So these four stages are there. So you have the Bij, Kutaj, Phalan Mukta, and Prarabdha. You know, because Prarabdha is already achieved, then that would mean Phalan Mukta would be the a priori, Kutaj would be fructifying, and Bija would be in the making. Right, like the body is prarabdha. It's the already achieved from previous. So it's already there. There's nothing you can do much about it. Here. Footnote 3. Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushan comments on this verse as follows. Just as blazing fire turns fuel wood to ashes, the fire of knowledge, the fire of relation of one's own Atma and Paramatma, turns to ashes all reactions, including those arising from pious acts, but not the prarabdha reactions. Right? Because if it burns to ashes your body and mind and intelligence, you don't have anything to work with. Right? So it leaves that until you get to the, you know, platform of surups, you know, until you get to the liberated platform. Right? Then you'll have your spiritual form. So then the other one isn't so important. That knowledge burns up all accumulated past karmas, which are like reeds, except the prarabdha karmas. And that knowledge transforms also the actions performed in the present life, making them like drops of water rolling off a lotus leaf, having no reactions. In other words, even though you're dealing with the body, what's there from Prarabdha Karma, the activities you perform now don't create further. Right? So this is what all these Vedic philosophies are explaining. You know, like that. But the problem is they don't really know that it's devotional service that is actually successful at this. Their systems don't really work so well. Though the Prarabdha Karmas are extremely weakened by the influence of this knowledge, they are still situated in the person with realization of Atma by the will of the Lord in order to preach the proper path of conduct. Because if the Prarabdha Karmas were completely destroyed, the body of the devotee, which is the result of Prarabdha Karma, would disappear, and thus there would be no one to preach the Lord's message. Right? You know. Otherwise, you're sitting there giving lecture, and people are thinking about it, asking questions, and that, and the atmosphere, you know, develops, and they're right into it, and then, whoop, the guy just disappears. You know, Prarabdha Karma, everything's gone. Like that. So, you know, so that's how you know your successful preaching, is when the whole room is empty, there's no one left. Then that was like, you know, that was good. Yeah, a little pile of ashes on the floor. Yeah, so then you know it's like that. You know. Then the question comes, do you sweep the ashes up, or, you know, now do you take those all and put them in some, you know, what do you do with the ashes? Yes. Krishna's pots, right? Okay. 438. In this world, there is nothing so sublime as pure transcendental knowledge. Such knowledge is the mature fruit of all mysticism. And one who has become accomplished in the practice of devotional service enjoys this knowledge within himself in due course of time. Knowledge culminates in Krishna consciousness. When we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. As such, there's nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge, right? So he says, when we speak of transcendental knowledge, we do so in terms of spiritual understanding. Understanding, we're not the body and all. We're not talking about transcendental knowledge, meaning about the pastimes. We know pastimes are there, how they work, like that. But we're talking about sambandhyan of understanding, you know, the nature of the living entity, the Lord, and their relationship. When that's there and that's appreciated, then the pastimes have a meaning. Otherwise, they don't really have meaning. As such, there is nothing so sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Ignorance is the cause of our bondage, and knowledge is the cause of our liberation. This knowledge is the mature fruit of devotional service. And when one is situated in transcendental knowledge, he need not search for peace elsewhere, for he enjoys peace within himself. In other words, this knowledge and peace culminate in Krishna consciousness. That is the last word in the Bhagavad Gita. So all this knowledge is given, like that, then they result in Krishna, and peace, they result in Krishna consciousness. So the knowledge will bring one to the liberated platform, right? So that's the peaceful platform. So that knowledge that brings us to that platform, that peace experience in Brahma-Bhuta, that culminates in Krishna consciousness. Right? There's nothing higher than that. So it all comes to prema. So that's the last word. So 439. A faithful man who is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to receive such knowledge. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. So, if you're dedicated to the knowledge, you control the senses. Right? So that means, subdue the senses means they're not engaged in maya, but they're engaged in practicing that knowledge. Right? Because we'll look at renunciation means just stopping the senses from engaging in activities connected with the material, with maya. But it also means, subduing the senses means engaging them in what's connected to the Supreme Lord. Right? Does that make sense? You have to have both. Because the actual point of controlling the senses by there's no maya is that you can engage them in Krishna's service. Right? Because if you just control it without engaging Krishna's service, that's very difficult. Right? As we said, for the impersonalist, the path is very difficult. Because there's no positive activity. But for the devotee, then it's not. It's not difficult. Because it's positive, because it's connected to the Lord. So there's positive engagement. So that's control of the senses. Or here, subduing the senses. So only a faithful attain the Lord. Such knowledge in Krishna consciousness can be achieved. Yeah, and then having achieved it, he quickly... So he is eligible to receive the knowledge. He's dedicated the knowledge so then he can receive. Because one, you have the element of receiving, meaning you're worthy now to hear, because you're committed to it. The other is that you've heard, but now to understand it. Mm. Right? And because you practice it, then you realize it. So it keeps on going. And having achieved it, he quickly attains the supreme spiritual peace. Right? So having achieved it means he's realized that that will bring him to the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Does that make sense? So that's the supreme spiritual peace. Or you could say, that's spiritual peace. But that will then bring him to prema. So that's what you could say, the supreme spiritual peace. Such knowledge in Krishna consciousness can be achieved by a faithful person who believes firmly in Krishna. Right, so faithful, and it's, that faith is firm. Then it can be achieved, this knowledge. One is called a faithful man who thinks that simply by acting in Krishna consciousness he can attain the highest perfection. Right, if you're thinking that no, I require other things to attain that highest perfection, then it's a distraction. Now Krishna consciousness will take care of everything. Because we said everything is connected to Krishna. So therefore if there's anything of value, it's connected to Krishna. Right? Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Now he was a district magistrate. So it's socially would you consider that a good situation? You know, on the district level, the district magistrate would be like in the cities, you know, the high court judge. Right? Because the district magistrate, he deals with all the legalities in the district. You know, like that. So he is the judicial authority in a district. So it's a respectable position, right? He was a family man, right? So that's more respectable than someone who's not, who's unmarried, right? Not only that, he has children. Right? He has a decent place to live. He's not living on the road somewhere. So, does he have anything, would he by all definition be materially well situated? Right? There, no one in any culture would complain. Right? He would be respected. Okay. So, the thing is why is he doing that?
So, sort of question.
And how? But how is that specifics of serving Krishna?
Show
example. And but what is he? How is he showing example?
Using the situation.
Using the situation. Yes. And
performing his duty.
He's performing his duties. But what we're trying to get at here is that what is the position of Vaishnavism at that time? How do people in the greater society look upon the Vaishnavas?
It's
degraded bunch of beggars, right? Because in their so-called renunciation, they have nothing. But they also have no philosophy, they have no practices, they have no nothing, right? So then you're getting rid of the two elements. Here's a respectable, sophisticated, educated man. And he's fully into Krishna consciousness. So therefore, someone who is cultured could feel comfortable taking it up. So therefore, his sophistication is not separate from Krishna. And being in that that situation, he's able to chant his rounds, study, write books, and take care of his family, right? Therefore, he has, 12 children. You know what I'm saying? If he didn't have any children, then someone else could say, oh, well, you don't know because, you know, you don't have any children. If there's children there, then there's no time for japa and this and that. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember one mother was going around. They were traveling around the world with their whole family. They had three kids like that. They were traveling around. And I remember sitting there and somebody came up and discussing something about grihastha life. And there was someone saying, you know, there's no time to chant and all that. And the lady looks at him and says, I've had three kids. There's never been a time I didn't chant 16 rounds. You know. So we're pointing out. And now if you had two or three, okay, then that'll cover most people. But those are the guys that have four, five, six kids. Right? Then you'll say, that's a big family. So when you have that big a family, then you can't do it. He's got 12 kids. Nobody does, you know, who do you know, you know, anywhere in your family and your friends that had 10, 12 kids? Huh? You know, okay. But like that. So it's rare. You know what I'm saying? It's very rare. Bach had 20. Bach.
Bach. Oh.
He had 20 kids.
Okay.
Two wives, but, you know, 20 kids. I think the one wife died, you know, some of the kids, whatever it is, but he had 20 kids. But so the point is then, you know, because once you get past that, I don't think they're going to make a difference. If someone has 12, someone has 15, they're not going to really make a big deal out of it, you know. But, you know, they make a big deal if you have one. No, but we have two. And they're like, oh, we have three. You know, they're like, no, we have five. You know, so it's always a thing. So no one can say, he's not a successful family man. He's not successful socially. He's not successful occupationally. And at the same time, he's fully Krishna conscious. Right? So therefore, there's no difference in what he's doing. That the devotee is just trying to situate himself socially so that people don't bother him and don't look down upon him. What's the use if it doesn't do some preaching? Does that make sense? That's the point. It does preaching. You have to recognize, you know, like that. I think it was what Keshav Bharati has this kind of, I know, this kind of hat, this big hat. It's a Western hat. I don't know if somebody gave him or that. It's a big hat, big brimmed hat, you know, for like out in the sun, like in Vrindavan and stuff like that. But it's a good quality hat. So he was wearing that. You know, his dhoti and everything and that hat. And he's walking through the airport. And one gentleman, you know, saw and he mentioned to who he's with and says, wow, look at that. It's an up-to-date Hare Krishna. You know, because they're used to slobs as Hare Krishna. So, you know, here, wow, an up-to-date, you know, like that. So he saw he's a gentleman and he's up-to-date. Wow, okay, cool, you know, like that. So the point is if that's the motive, then people can appreciate. The purpose is to establish Krishna consciousness. So you have to preach at all levels. Like that. So it has use. But this idea, I have to get money, but it doesn't have anything to do with Krishna. Or get social position. Or family. Or facility. But it's not connected to Krishna. So the point is this. There isn't something different. So that's why he says, one is called faithful man when he thinks that simply by acting in Krishna consciousness, he can attain the highest perfection. So it's within Krishna consciousness. If you're saying that, no, I have to do a separate endeavor, that is Maya. Because if the Brahmavadi is technically in Maya because he thinks he's separate from the Lord, or has no relationship with the Lord, then why wouldn't just some normal, ordinary, mundane, social position and facilities be Maya? No, I'm a devotee, but that doesn't mean devotees can't be in Maya. You know, it's like Maya is very broad. Maya is not, you know, restricted. Oh, he's a devotee. Yeah, yeah, we're not dealing with that guy. You know, no, it's, she'll deal with anybody. She's very liberal. You know. This faith is attained by the discharge of devotional service and by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, which cleanses one's heart of all material dirt. Over and above this, one should control the senses, right? So now, over and above this, one has the faith, he's discharging devotional service, he's chanting, then there should be the control of the senses. Because that will keep one from getting distracted, right? What will distract you from Krishna consciousness? Right? The senses. So that's why the senses need to be controlled. That's the only reason. It's not that controlling the senses has a goodness or badness on its own. It's good because it insists in Krishna consciousness. It's bad because it goes against Krishna consciousness. Why? Because the senses, devotional service means to engage the senses in the Lord of the senses. So now if we're engaging the senses not in the Lord of the senses, then that's not devotional service. That's why it's not useful. And not only that, is generally if we don't control the senses, what we engage the senses in is far more attractive to us as conditioned living entities than the engagement of the senses in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? You know, so in other words, the sinful activity will create more attraction to the mind than a pious one. Right? Unless one is inherently pious. Right, you know, born with the divine qualities, like Arjuna. He's not attracted by sinful activities, but he's attracted by pious ones. So that'll also get in the way. Right? But in any case, you control the senses. So then it makes it favorable for Krishna consciousness. That's the reason for it. Right? Because it's not otherwise than simply by acting Krishna conscious. No, we have to be moral, we have to be upstanding, we have to be socially acceptable. No, we don't. Mm. We simply have to be Krishna conscious. Mm. And then Krishna consciousness can include those other things. But if those other things don't include Krishna consciousness, basically useless. Mm. A person who is faithful to Krishna and who controls his senses can easily attain perfection in the knowledge of Krishna consciousness without delay. So perfection means you're realizing it. But you can get the knowledge, but to realize it, that's then will come. Because otherwise, you're doing service but not controlling the senses. You're controlling the senses, not doing service. You won't get the perfection of knowledge. Right? Which is Krishna consciousness. Right? Well, you'll get something. Means how, what degree you're following, that degree you'll get. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Yes.
So chanting and controlling the senses, they are inseparable?
They're inseparable. Because one is that the senses are, as we mentioned, there's two aspects that control the senses. Mm-hmm. One is they're not doing any nonsense, and two, they're engaged in Krishna service. So both are controlling the senses. Mm-hmm. So because here is that, you could also say that this phase... Okay, a person who is faithful to Krishna and controls the senses can easily attain. So he's faithful, he controls the senses, means they're not being engaged badly and they're being engaged, you know, in service. Without delay. Vritti. Having described those who are qualified to receive transcendental knowledge, the Lord next describes the unqualified and the result they receive. So again, we see as Krishna starts with what's actual the principle, and then gives the, you know, what's not right. Mm. This is always the best way to explain. What is the standard and everything, and then what's not? Because if you explain the other, then people get so much into that and understand that, and then they don't understand when you're dealing with what's correct. So you explain what is the standard first. Then you deal with exceptions, right? So that's why also an explanation in logic, that you're explaining what is the thesis, what is the standard, and what are all these other things. Yes. But that will therefore bring up the doubt. Yes. But you have to have established your point. Yes. Then you work with the doubts. Mm-hmm. And then clearing the doubts, then again it brings it naturally back to your point. Right? So that you conclude therefore with your point. But you don't start with the doubt. Mm-hmm. You know, like sometimes devotees on issues, they want to start with the exception. Mm-hmm. No, you have to start with standard. Just like, let's say we want to discuss what's reinitiation. What's the first thing you have to discuss?
Initiation.
What is initiation? You don't know what initiation is. How do you know what reinitiation is, right? If you can't cook the beans, how do you make refried beans? You understand? It doesn't happen. So if you don't know, because like devotees will discuss reinitiation, but if you ask them what's initiation, they won't know. Because it's not discussed. So unless we actually know what's the standards of philosophy, culture, unless we know what's food, how do we know what's an exception to that? You know what I'm saying? We have food. If someone's sick, there's an exception. Right? The person who's, you know, has, let's say, liver problems, he avoids rich food. You know what I'm saying? Person has slow digestion, avoids eating later in the day. You know what I'm saying? So all these different things are there for as exceptions. But what real food is, that's not known. You know what I'm saying? Somebody's into food. You know, discussing before. They're a food freak. They can't explain what's real food. Right? Because Krishna explains in the Gita, food in the mode of goodness. Right? You know, it's juicy, it's sweet, it's rich. Right? Huh? Fatty. You know, all these things. But as soon as you say fatty, someone who's into hell will say, no, no, it can't be fatty. But then, but if it's not fatty, it means it's in the mode of ignorance. Right?
Raw food.
If you're a cow, yes. You know what I'm saying? So, you understand? So, the point is these things come up, is that they're not connected to the Lord. They're exceptions. And so we have to take the exception after understanding the principle. Then, of course, exceptions are always valid because material world means it's full of exceptions. But unless you know the standard to compare it to, how do you know what to deal with? You know what I'm saying? So people are so used to exceptions that they think that's the standard. That if someone's doing something that's actually normal, they'll think it's weird.
Can it also have something to do with problems with authority? That the principle generally is left out because it restricts us?
Yeah, because principle means the authority. Yeah, yes, that's a very good point. I never thought of that. Because I was thinking of the form of authority. I never took it that the principle is the underlying the basis of authority. But yeah, because if somebody is authority but doesn't speak on the principle, then what they're describing won't efficiently work, though you have to follow them, though it's not efficient. Like the manager, let's say, doesn't understand something, so what he's telling you to do actually technically is not right, but you have to follow because he's the authority. But you expect that the authority will actually understand the principle. That's a very good point. So that's why principles aren't understood, because people don't have faith in authority. Very good.
Yes. Does that mean an amateur is exceptional?
Well, there's a difference between exceptional and an exception. So they're an exception when it comes to what is, you know, actual culture. When it's how uncultured they are, then they are exceptional. You know.
Yeah.
They exceptionally lack culture, yes. Okay, so now we're getting into, now we've described what is the faithful man and what's proper and all that within knowledge. Now, then the opposite, 440. But ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul there is happiness neither in this world nor in the next. Right? Does that make sense? So if they doubt the revealed scriptures, they'll fall back to wherever they were. Now, if they fall back to sinful life, they basically disappear. You don't hear about them. But if they fall back to a pious life, then you still hear from them, because they will consider piety and Krishna consciousness to be the same. So not being able to discriminate, they'll be able to present themselves as still quite Krishna consciously situated, though all they're describing is material piety. Their whole platform is pranamoy, justice, morality, and economics. But there's actually no necessarily Krishna consciousness. So they've fallen down to pranamoy. You should be on anandamoy. So that's a fall down. The consciousness is lower. Though they're not doing sinful activities. Right? Because when we say that someone bloops, I just saw it the other day in something. It's just a karmi thing. And it was talking about something bloops. So even the karmis use the term.
They know it's there.
Yeah, I wanted to look it up and see what was exactly how they're defining.
It's probably not a birdie.
Huh? No. some other thing. No. It was talking about different situations. It wasn't meaning bloop, mean like, you know, like this, that. It just means that, you know, I think it was, oh yeah, even in like the end of movies. I mean, at the end of the movies, they show the bloopers.
Oh, man.
Means what scene didn't work. You know, the person went to do something and he laughed when he was serious, or he went to do something and dropped it, or like that. They call them bloopers. I think that was the thing. Yeah. So the principle is there. So it's not a politically incorrect term. Yes. Just to let everyone know. Yeah, so... How do we get to that? Because we're just going to say something about the bloop, you know, the... fall down. So when the living entity bloops from the spiritual platform, he falls in the material world. Mm. But he starts off as Brahma, great sages, Prajapatis. Mm. So you can't say that's an impious position. That's quite a good position, materially. So here is that the point, that fall down can mean anything that's not God conscious. So even fall, but we'll consider falling down to a pious situation isn't bad. Does that make sense? But it's still a fall down. It's not Krishna conscious. You know, like probably like Bhakti Chumars, they were saying, but he's so young. I think he had only been in the movement. Maybe 9 months or something. Prabhupada was giving him sannyas. They said that he's so new, so young, you know, like that. And you know, what if he falls down, you know, like that? And then Prabhupada looked at him and said, "Yeah, if he falls down, he'll fall down to the water of goodness." You know, so that kind of thing. So like that, but it's, you know, still in this, we're looking at the absolute. It's still a fall down. So therefore, we have to be very, very careful about this. So we understand that we can't doubt the revealed scriptures. You can have questions and not understand how to apply it. You can't doubt the authority of scripture. Otherwise, but it says, but ignorant and faithless persons who doubt the revealed scriptures do not attain God consciousness. They fall down. For the doubting soul, there's happiness neither in this world or in the next, right? Because if you doubt, you can't... Means the gross materialist has full faith in the material world. Right? But the person who is a skeptic, he doesn't enjoy here. Skeptics do not enjoy materially, and they don't enjoy spiritually.
That's why they are...
Right? Yes, someone has to be faithful. Right? But the point is transferring that faith from materialism to Krishna. The faithless fall down. Persons who are almost like animals have no faith in or knowledge of the standard revealed scriptures. Right? We also have to point here, animals can mean either very gross, which is how we'll take it, or animals means from Prabhupada's platform. Yeah, yeah. You know, it means, you know, your sophisticated Western gentleman. He's an animal. Very nice animal, right? You know, puppies are cute and they're nice, right? You know, like that, but they're still an animal. Does that make sense? Even though they have knowledge of or can cite passages from the revealed scriptures, have actually no faith in these words. So that person is an animal. And even though others may have faith in scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, they do not believe in or worship the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. Footnote. According to Srila Baladeva Vidyabhushana, this last category of faithless persons are, quote, those who, in spite of having faith, doubt if they can attain the perfection. Right? Because you have the devotee, no, I'm so fallen, I can't, then you're not going to get there. The point is the soul, that's your natural position. So it's not a matter of getting there, it's a matter of removing the dirt that's there. It's not that you have to get there, you have to remove the dirt. Such persons cannot have any standing in Krishna consciousness, right? Because that's taken as humility. Oh, I'm so fallen, I can't do it, so therefore I'll just go on being a nonsense. Right? Such persons cannot have any standing in Krishna consciousness. They fall down. Out of all the above mentioned persons, those who have no faith and are always doubtful, make no progress at all. So no faith and doubtful. So they may have knowledge or not, right? You know, they may be ignorant or not. They may be more animalistic or not, but the ones who have no faith and are always doubtful, they'll never make progress.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, can a devotee be speaking the scriptures but have doubt in this?
You can, but the point is, but one wants to clear that doubt. If he actually is convinced of his own doubt, then he'll have a problem. But if he may have a doubt, but by discussing it, then in the association of devotees, then by his own explanation, by others' questions, that doubt will be removed. Like that. Because our process is, we may not be fully qualified, but we sit down and start to speak. And then by speaking, then, you know, we have to associate, hear, explain. So, you know, if we just read it, that's one thing. We catch what we want or not. But if we have to explain it to others, you have to go into detail. Then they'll ask a question. You have to go into more detail. So you convince yourself. That's why it says Sukadev Goswami became perfect by speaking, Parikit by hearing. Is that all right? So it's not a problem that one has not realized. And no, one starts speaking. That's why from the beginning, the new devotees, they speak Krishna consciousness. And that will give them understanding.
So we can doubt our own ability to understand, but not doubt what's in the
there. No, but even there, he says, those who, in spite of having faith, doubt if they can attain the perfection. Because the point is who are you to not be affected by Krishna's process?
Yeah, okay, maybe I put it in the wrong way.
You know, it's like saying, well, if I jump in the pool, what if I don't become wet?
Yeah.
You know?
But I'm not the body.
Yeah. My skin is so dry, even if I went into the pool, I would not become wet. The whole pool would get sucked up into my skin, and it'd still be dry. Yes.
Is there different levels of faith in the scriptures?
Different levels of faith. No, there's different understandings. But faith basically means you accept that what the Shastra says is correct, whether we understand it or not. But this is the principle, they have faith in Scripture. Now, detail that the Scripture describes, we may be able to appreciate or not. But the point is, the Scripture has to be correct. So what that means, so that will be a doubt or a misgiving, right? A doubt is I don't understand how it applies. Misgiving means I don't like it. I may understand how it applies, but I don't want to apply it.
But how to come to this faith? I mean, it's very important, like for people who are not practicing, who are not devotees. Once they get that faith, then everything will be revealed. But
yeah.
So what's the turning point between no faith, not reading, and faith reading?
It's association of devotees. Yeah. But the point is, one has to have that faith that the scriptures are correct. Like I said before, it's like two devotees would be, two brahmacharis are arguing over some point. And one is saying this and one is saying that, you know, going on and on and on, right? And then a third devotee, a little more mature, comes by and then says, no, but Prabhupada says this. In that nanosecond, the argument's over. Both sides accept that point, drop it, walk off. Right? And now you can hold the whole thing, well, you know, even Prabhupada here, well, I don't know, it's not politically correct, we can't say, they can go on talking about doubting Prabhupada and present it as it's a perfectly normal, you know, we're in an intellectual democratic society, you know, of enlightened persons, and so it's our right to be able to do that. That's lack of faith. Because the point is no, it's correct. We may not understand how to apply it. You know, what does it mean? You know what I'm saying? Because, like, let's take something, you know, yeah, juicy, like, you know, woman is always under the, you know, authority of the father, the husband, or the son. Right? So, woman has no freedom. Right? So, your modern democratic society will not appreciate that one. Right? So one could doubt that. No? Yes? Okay. So, but the point is what does protection mean? Right? So, by the you know, Western kind of machissimo understanding of that, I wonder if you could do a, what do you call it? You know, when you take two words and you put them together? It's a name for that? If you could take...
Conjunction?
No. It's a thing where you make a new word out of it.
Oh.
It's a name for it. It's not. It's like a synthesis, but it's got a specific name. Okay. Then, if you could take machissimo and what's the other one? It starts with an M. Also, it means hates women.
Misogynist.
If you could take misogynist and machissimo and make it into one word, that would be the perfect.
Machissimist.
Machissimistic. Yeah, maybe. So, okay. So then that means is that you just control the woman, tell her everything what to do, and she can't make any decisions or have any say in anything, right? That would be the standard interpretation, no? Yeah, okay. And so therefore then we'll say, but that doesn't fit into the modern thing and this and that, but women are intelligent, they're doing so many things, they're so qualified, but that's not what the Vedas meant at all. That's what the modern... misogynist, you know, machissimo says. Right? Does that make sense? So, then, but the Vedic thing is that the support, protection means all the facility they require for anything on the body, mind, and words level is provided for them. They don't have to run around and get it themselves. That's what it means. So you don't see practically any of those modern machissimo misogynists doing that. Right? And therefore, the women are complaining that the point's not right because it's being used in the opposite of what it's supposed to be used because of ignorance. Right? Because it's based on I'm the body, they're the body, they're the woman, I'm the man, so therefore I'm the man. Right? So, you know, I say what happens. But that's not how it works. Does that make sense? That's so it becomes misapplied. So you have to have faith that, okay, the scriptures say this, I don't understand how it works. So then you'll perform service, it'll be revealed, you associate with devotees, find from them. That's what you do. But you have faith it's correct. You may not know how to apply it, but you have faith it's correct.
Is it possible, Maharaj, to have some faith in the scriptures and then doubt? Like, for example, you know, during Prabhupada's time, one devotee, when Prabhupada said they didn't go to the moon.
Yeah, but what happened to it? They fall down.
So that means he didn't really have faith?
He had it up to a point, but the point is that you want it to be complete. It doesn't mean your understanding is complete. Your faith is complete. Like, just how much does the modern man understand science? Right? Not much, unless they're scientists. I mean, a non-scientist, how much does he understand of science? But how much faith does he have in science and technology?
Unlimited.
Total faith. Right? In other words, you're using a gizmo of modern technology. And it has some glitches in it, some bugs. But you have full faith that there's somebody's going to work that all out. And then the next model will be perfect. You don't go, yeah, hey, this is this and this has this problem. These things are useless. And then go back to, you know, your tin cans or whatever it is. You know, they don't do that. No, you have faith. It will happen. So the same point is theirs. I don't understand it, but I have faith that by performing devotional service, right? Then, it says, a faithful man is dedicated to transcendental knowledge and who subdues his senses is eligible to receive such knowledge. So the point is he wasn't faithful and not dedicated to transcendental knowledge. Therefore, why would he receive that knowledge? Even though maybe his senses were controlled. So that's why I made the point, is that there's two kinds of these faithless persons. those whose senses are controlled, those who are not. So the one who's not controlled, they disappear, you never hear of them again. And then they'll resurface something later. But the ones who control their senses, they go to the side. They're actually in a fallen position, but they don't go away. They present themselves as still in Krishna consciousness because God is good, so what's good is God. So morality is good, so therefore it's devotional. I'm moral, and I make all my points on morality. I argue morality. I point out everyone else's faults in morality. Therefore, I'm Krishna consciousness. But it has nothing to do with it. One's in a fallen condition. Just it's not so far, like the early, right? Because it said, you know, Lord Chaitanya first saves the most fallen. So he starts with it, you know. I say, you know, you got to get right down there and really, you know, scrape to get him off the bottom of the gutter, right? You know, then after that, somebody just fell in, right? Easier to pull out. Does that make sense?
Mm. Yeah.
Does this work, or?
Yeah. But also, there's a verse that says, if you have implicit faith in the revealed scriptures and the scriptural masters,
everything will be revealed.
Yeah.
That's right. They're eligible to achieve such knowledge. So you have to have that faith. Then it comes. So if devotees don't understand certain areas, can't understand that certain areas, even though it's explained to them, and they have sufficient intelligence, it's not like they're, you know, somebody who's seriously intellectually handicapped. It means they lack faith. Otherwise, why can't it be understood? Right? There's an attachment to something else. But the point is as long as that's predominantly their faith in Krishna consciousness, then that will carry them through there. But if they make it into an issue, they'll have more problems. Right? So that boy you mentioned, he made it into an issue about not going to the moon. Just he didn't understand that point, but he can keep going back to the point. It's one thing he didn't understand it and this and that and moved on and didn't think about it. Then other things he'll get purified, convinced, and then eventually it'll get him. But he takes it as a thing and then discusses that and tries to make it. So someone who takes that down and that's all they discuss, they'll have more problems. It's not a matter of they take it and they're discussing with everybody so they can explain it so he does understand it. You understand? So these differences there are important. Yes?
Maharaj says, you know,
having faith, without, they can attain perfection. Yeah.
What if one has faith, if they can attain perfection, but not in one life?
Okay. Then it'll take more than one life. Okay. What's the problem? It means Maharaj Katvanga did it in a moment, which means 1/11th of a second. So,
what are we waiting for?
You know, a lifetime is, you know, quite a while. You know, just multiply. 11, right? Moments in a second, right? Times 60, you get a minute, right? Times 60, you get an hour. Times 24, right? You get a day. Times 365, right? And then times whatever you think is, you know, a lifetime. You know, another 50, 60, 70 years. How many moments are there? So that means that's that many opportunities to fully surrender. So that's a lot, you know. So we're not saying, okay, you get one shot, two shots, three shots. We're saying you get, you know, billions of shots, you know, like that.
I
bet you can do that all in one lifetime. Why waste? Why put it off for another lifetime? Right? You want to, you know, be born again, sit around in the, you know, maternity ward with all these other crying materials and all that, you know, and then have everybody come and go like this and do that to you for a few years, dress you up in all crazy stuff you want to be dressed at, you know, and then, you know, I'm saying go through this whole thing again, and then whether to get married or not, and all again, all that whole thing, you want to go through all that again, and then you can get situated and start your serious Krishna consciousness. You know what I'm saying? That's a waste of time. You know what I'm saying? So in other words, if you don't do it this lifetime, you're going to have to go through as much stuff basically up to now to get serious that you can apply yourself again. That's a waste of time.
Yeah, I agree. If one judges the trajectory, though, of one's current position...
Have you ever heard of a parabolic curve?
I've heard the name.
Right, a curve has a certain curve and it just stays like that. So eventually it turns into a circle. Right? You know, how big the circle is. Parabolic means it starts off very flat and goes up until it makes a 90 degrees. So that means it starts off slow and it gets faster as it goes. Just like this course. Starts out going very, very slow and it gets quicker at the end. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll end here.
Better to stay on board. Better to stay on board.
Yes. Better to stay on board because you never know what's going to happen, right? Especially if you go to the heavenly planets and then come back, right? Because, you know, the minimum standard on the heavenly planet is 10,000 years, you know, like the moon or these lower ones, right? And then the golden age of Lord Chaitanya is 10,000 years. You don't want to come back after, you know, the golden age. So, you know, better get it together now.
Risky business.
Yeah. You know, you have to go to a new universe, you know, like that. And, you know, it's like, you know, these souls here, he's been around a while. So, like that, you go to a new universe, a whole new set of, you know, living entities.
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Sattva Veta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaurav.